Ghost Hunting in New England,
your favorite spooky podcast.
Hello and happy Wednesday. Welcome to this week's episode of Ghost Hunting in New England with your hosts, Amelia.
And Beth.
And what are we talking about this week, Beth?
This week, we're talking about South Carolina.
Ooh.
Yeah. This was this is Beth's week, so you're going to get to hear all Beth's stories. Beth has been feeling very cooped up and like she's missing vacations. She's tired of COVID and having to stay home all the time. So this week, she is reliving her last significant trip by sharing some of the fun haunted places of Charleston, South Carolina. I made two trips down there last summer, one in May to drop off my friend Jen, and then again in August to pick her up and drive her home. And she humored me with a ghost tour to explore some fun city history. So, Beth, the cheapest of Yankees, as much as this will surprise you.
Can I ask a quick question?
Of course.
Is Beth going to continue to referring to Beth in third person the entire episode?
She might. She just might.
Oh, goodness. All right. She is cooped up.
I am a very cheap Yankee, and so it really does kill me to pay for things that I don't need to pay for, but I did actually pay for one of those walking tours where you follow a guide around in a small group. I think we were like eight people, and we saw like a dozen sites and heard the spooky stories that the guides had to tell us. So interestingly, there are a number of outdoor spaces that have recurring sightings of ghosts in Charleston, South Carolina. And so the one that I want to tell you about is an alley, right? And it's an alley called Philadelphia Alley. It was given the name in honor of the city of Philadelphia sending some much needed cash to Charleston after a fire in 1810. And I don't know about you, but it seems weird to name a random brick alley, like after a city, to say thanks, but whatever. It had many other names over the years. It's been called Cow Alley, Kinlock Court, and most memorably, Dueling Alley. Amelia, do you know that there is a legitimate code of dueling?
I think I do know that, yeah.
Do you know?
Because there's a difference between dueling and just shooting someone. You know, so yeah, I do know that. Like, you have to take like a certain amount of steps. You have to announce it. You have to
make sure
everyone involved has a gun. Like, yeah.
All of that comes from the Code Duello, and it's 25 rules of dueling that were published in 1777. And do you know where they came from?
South Carolina.
No, they actually came from Ireland. They were published by the Irish. I read through them. They're very confusing, so I'm not going to share them all here. Basically, it's all about the rules about how many shots get fired, who can apologize when and for what. And there's a whole bunch of stuff in there about seconds, which I only vaguely understand from watching Bridgerton. But it was funny all the same. So, for example, rule number 10. Any insult to a lady under a gentleman's care or protection to be considered as, by one degree, a greater offense than if given to the gentleman personally and to be regulated accordingly. So basically, if someone insulted me to Sean by saying, "Hey, Sean, your wife has an unladylike laugh," that would actually be a more serious offense than someone going up and saying, "Hey, Sean, you're a scoundrel." Right? He would have to take further action on me being a bad laugher than him being called a scoundrel. Right? Or if someone told Paul that Amelia is a card cheat, that would be more serious if someone accused Paul directly, like, "Hey, Paul, you're a highway robber." Right? Like,
I think that still stands.
Sorry?
I think that's still the way things are.
Do you think?
Absolutely. If someone walked up to Paul and was like, "Hey, Paul, you're ugly," he'd be like, screw off. But if someone walked up to Paul and was like, "Hey, Paul, Amelia's ugly," he'd be like, "Well, I'm going to murder you now."
Well.
And I think Sean would feel the same way.
Maybe. But it's the idea that, you know, yes, it would be just blown off if it was a one for one. But it's like somebody walking up and being like, "Hey, Sean, your wife's got bad breath," versus, "Hey, Sean, you're a big ass hat and everyone hates you." Like, I don't know.
I still think it stands. I think it still stands.
Okay. I mean, it's chivalrous and all.
Yes.
But, you know, then there's this one. This is rule 17. All right. The challenged chooses his ground. The challenger chooses his distance. The seconds fix the time and terms of firing. I mean, I like the idea that they actually have a rule written out. I mean, it's 17 out of 25, but there is a rule about how you choose the time and place. I mean, like when we were kids, mom always said, one of you cuts, the other one chooses. So if you had to like cut pieces of something, like you couldn't cut a big piece for yourself and then take it. If you cut the big piece, the other person would take it. So it made things fair for everyone. Anyway, so there are 25 of those rules. You can look them up pretty easily. It's called the Code Duello, and that is D-U-E-L-L-O. And you can try to decipher what they mean. But getting back to Dueling Alley. It's actually an ideal spot to hold a duel. It's a brick alleyway between the St. Philip's Church Cemetery on one side and several residential buildings on the other side. It runs the length of a city block and has very limited access. There are no doorways from the alleyway into the buildings themselves. There's only an archway into the cemetery on one side, and the only other ways into or out of the alley are on either side of the alleyway, one onto Church Street or one on the other end of the block to State Street. So I wanted to tell you a little bit about Joseph Ladd, the whistling doctor. He was born and grew up in Newport, Rhode Island. He was a kid who liked literature and poetry, not working on his dad's substantial farm. So he spent a lot of time at the local library where he met Amanda, was his one true love. And I suddenly feel like I'm in a Disney narration here for a second. Amanda was an orphan from richy rich parents, and all the money her parents had was now hers. Just because it was the 1780s, she couldn't actually control her own money. Instead, she had a guardian for it. It was some skeevy old lawyer who made a nice buck off her investments, and he didn't want to lose it. So Joseph wanted to get married, but he wanted to be able to support a family first. So he took an apprenticeship as a medical doctor. Amanda tells him not to worry about the money. There's no reason to wait. She has plenty of money. Joseph goes to her guardian, and surprise, the guardian turns him down. But that's not the end of it. The guardian attorney Sleazeball starts spreading gossip and rumors about Joseph being a money-grubbing gold digger just looking to marry Amanda for her money. Word spreads, and suddenly Joseph and the doctor he works with are persona non grata all over Newport. The doctor can't survive without any business. So, and he liked Joseph. You know, Joseph was a nice guy. He got along with everybody, apparently, except this skeevy attorney. So he sets Joseph up with a place in Charleston, South Carolina, to begin his own medical practice. And it's a great place because Charleston was in great need of doctors after the American Revolution. Apparently, all the American doctors got killed while fighting and all the British doctors got kicked out. So Joseph was pretty able to build his practice quickly, and he was soon a beloved member of Charleston society. In the time between his arrival in Charleston and his blooming success, Joseph made friends with a local guy named Ralph Isaacs. They spent time buddying around and doing stuff that young men do. But as Joseph became more and more well-known and accepted into society, with a capital S, Ralph became bitter. Joseph invited Ralph to all the events and introduced him to everyone, but Ralph wasn't having it. He wasn't somebody that got on well in those sort of situations. And he really just wanted to go back to living their sort of anonymous life together. In 1786, their friendship finally blew up one night after a showing of Richard III, the Shakespeare play. Ralph picked a fight with Joseph about one of the actresses, and Joseph, being a friendly, you know, glasses half full kind of guy, defended the actress as being young and inexperienced. Well, Ralph wouldn't let it go. He went as far as to threaten to send a letter to Amanda telling her all about the imagined affair Joseph was having with this actress. Joseph eventually got tired of being baited into more fighting and said goodnight. Ralph refused to shake his hand goodnight, just sneered at him, and they went their separate ways. But it doesn't end there either. Ralph had an op-ed published in the coming days in the local paper calling Joseph a blasted scoundrel. Joseph's honor had been insulted again. And he couldn't just ignore it or leave town and start over somewhere new again. He had to do something about this, and only a duel would settle the score. Joseph challenged Ralph to a duel at dawn the next morning. Interestingly enough, duels were actually legal in South Carolina until, oh, I lost it in my note page. Where was it?
1997.
No. 1881.
Huh.
And it was even like celebrated in Charleston. Like this was a big deal. They had a whole alley just designated for duels. So, I mean, like this was a thing that went on fairly frequently. All right. So Joseph and Ralph arrive at the alley. The rules of engagement were agreed upon. Joseph turned and took his 21 paces. And when he faced back to Ralph, he aimed wide, like a gentleman, and missed his shot. Ralph, however, not a gentleman, did not miss. He shot Joseph in the belly. Joseph's friends helped him out of the alley and back to his rooming house, where they tended him for the next 10 days until he died of his wounds. And since then...
Oh my goodness, 10 days, that's a long time to die from being shot in the stomach. Oh
yeah, and I mean, I'm certainly not a medical professional by any means, but I'm pretty sure that at 10 days, like he probably died of sepsis mm-hmm. as opposed to mm-hmm. anything else. So, you know, just the blood infection got him. So anyway, since then, did I mention how old our Joseph was?
No.
Practicing doctor in Charleston had wanted to marry a girl. How old do you think he is?
19.
Close. 22.
Well, late enough to go to med school. He just had to apprentice for some guy.
Yeah, it's crazy. 22 years old. He was already like the town doctor, right? And being accepted all over the place.
God bless him.
Yeah. All right. So since then, there have been countless experiences of unusual happenings in that alleyway. It's a must stop on any walking ghost tour of Charleston. So there are a lot of witnesses to the spooky happenings in the alley. Many, many people report sudden vapors and mists just appearing in the alley. Other people hear the echoes of gunshots ringing through the alley at all times of day and night. People in the residences that border the alley don't stay long in their swanky homes due to these unsettling noises they routinely hear out behind their homes. I mean, do you want to stay somewhere or live somewhere for a long time where there's always like, were those gunshots? Like, I think that would be very good cause to move on to somewhere else. There are stories of people feeling they are being gently nudged aside by the barrel of a gun, only to hear a gunshot ring out after they move aside. So that one to me is crazy because like imagine that like there's a spirit of something looking to shoot at somebody and it's like, get out of the way of my gun. And then they fire, right?
Yeah.
And many, many people have heard the whistling doctor, Joseph Ladd, strolling through the alleyway, whistling a happy tune as he walks the alley where his fate was sealed. So when I went on this tour, our very own tour guide shared a story about an experience she had in the alley about a year before our tour. She'd been giving her usual talk when she noticed a man in a hat and dirty coat sitting on the steps that led up to a newer parking lot. The parking lot, while it borders on the alleyway and there are steps, there's actually a gate and it's a locked gate coming through to the alley. So you can't just go from the alley into the parking lot. She didn't think much of him, just thought that he might be a drunk or homeless person having a sit down. But as she gave her talk, she noticed suddenly the man was no longer there. And unless he melted through the gate into the parking lot, he had just disappeared. He hadn't walked past them in the alley. He hadn't walked the other way down the alley. There's no way he could have actually cleared the alley between the time she saw him there and when she noticed he was gone. So he just disappeared. She said she went over and checked the gate to be sure it was locked and even asked people in the group if anyone saw the man leave. But no one else in the group had even seen a man sitting there. She said it's the only paranormal experience she's ever had while giving these tours for the last few years. So this is all very spooky. And you can certainly visit the Philadelphia Alley day or night. There's no admission fee. And I'm going to let you know that you should Google map it and follow your phone's directions because, well, I don't really have an address to give you. It's the Philadelphia Alley in Charleston, South Carolina.
Cool.
Ta-da! I only have one more story. Did you want to talk about that one?
What happened to Amanda?
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, okay.
She probably got a letter that her beloved was shot to death in a duel and she moved on. There isn't a lot of information about Amanda because he didn't really share that with a lot of people, what was going on. A lot of the information that is around about his relationship with Amanda and what happened with the solicitor was because he told his landladies who he lived with in Charleston. You know, he rented a room there and he told them what had happened, but it wasn't something that he told a lot of people about. And he didn't even tell like his family, I guess, back in Newport. So
Yeah, good story. I like the, there's a little New England thing there too.
Yeah.
Connection. You like that? That's the word.
Yeah.
A little New England connection. Mm-hmm. All right. What's up for story number two?
All right. Story number two. The next place I want to tell you about is the Provost Dungeon. Now, Amelia,
cool.
I don't think we've done much talking about dungeons on here, have we?
Not too much. About a little, not too much.
No. And I think it's a shame because as a society, we should have more open and active conversations about dungeons. They bring to mind the images of chains on the walls and prisoners in rags eating bread and water. Dirty, dark, underground. A good dungeon can make for a really spectacular setting for some haunted action. So I think that in general, we should all be talking more about dungeons. Built in 1771, the Provost Dungeon is in the basement of the Exchange Building. And the Exchange Building was built as a replacement for the Half Moon Battery. The Half Moon Battery was the wall that encircled the eastern edge of Charleston. In the Provost Dungeon, you can actually still see part of the wall. So when they built the Exchange Building, they really incorporated the wall into the dungeon basement itself. The building has served a number of functions over the years. It was a commercial exchange, custom house, post office, city hall, military headquarter, museum, and sadly, from 1775 to 1865, the most common use of the building was as a place to hold slave auctions. So there's been an awful lot of sadness that's happened in that building. Right? The building was the British headquarters during the American Revolution, and the British were actually the ones who converted the basement into a dungeon. They kept the American POWs, they kept British soldiers, citizens, slaves, they were all kept there. Men, women, and children were all kept in the same cramped space, a mere block from the water's edge. Being so close to the water, it wasn't uncommon for the dungeon to flood with seawater on a regular basis. Prisoners who were in the dungeon were just left there. Many actually drowned from the incoming water, and others developed terrible skin infections from the salt sores they got from the salt water on their skin. As though just the regular disease and abuse of life in the dungeon wasn't enough. It was just a horrible place. If you were lucky enough to die quickly, your body would just be left in the dungeon with the living. And as your body rotted, your former cellmates would be forced to endure the smell of rotting human flesh in the hot Charleston air. And that really...
Gross.
Right? Blech. All right. There have been many a person who spent their last days in the dungeon or in the grand ballroom upstairs or who were hung on a gallows on the front steps. So let's talk about two of them. I'm going to keep with Amelia's pirate theme during season four. I want to tell you about Stede Bonnet, maybe it's Bonnet, B-O-N-N-E-T, the gentleman pirate. He was a rich landowner in Barbados, and he took an unusual path to being a pirate. You know, I mean, usually pirates, they get a job on a ship, they kind of work their way up the ranks. He didn't do that. He took all of his money from all of this land that he owned. There were rumors that he just really hated his wife and wanted to get away. So he bought a boat and he hired a crew, which would make sense if he knew anything about the ocean, but he didn't. He was not a sailor. He knew nothing about any of this, and his crew knew it. He was seen as a bit of a buffoon. He named his ship Revenge and set about to, you know, pirate other ships. He was mediocre at best. And then he happened to meet a certain Edward Teach. Remember who Edward Teach is?
No. Who's Edward Teach?
Blackbeard.
Oh, cool.
Right? So
I have a comment to make. Okay. I have a comment.
Sure.
So I totally understand, like, not liking your spouse and wanting to work all the time and just get the heck out of that situation, right? I get it. But why piracy? Like, you could become, you could be a shipper. What are they called? Like a merchant shipper.
Mm-hmm.
You get into importing, exporting. You can go into fishing. Like, there's a lot of different things you could do with the boat. You could have a tour company. There's a lot, you know, take people out on the sea.
Mm-hmm.
Why become a pirate?
I don't know.
Like, or even if you wanted the thrill, if you wanted a life of crime, like, there are so many more easier ways to do crime than to be a pirate.
Yes, there are. And I think that maybe he just, I don't know. I don't know what his problem was, but.
And why did he name his boat Revenge? Who is he getting revenge on, his wife?
Right. I don't know. Maybe it was revenge on, you know, pirates who would.
Sanity? Revenge on sanity? Like, what is this? What is this guy doing?
Maybe he had been trapped by pirates as a child or something, you know, very like Julius Caesar kind of stuff. And he just wanted to take revenge on other ships. I don't know. But yeah.
I don't know what you're about to say, but I have a feeling this guy, whatever happens to him, he had coming. All right, continue. Sorry.
All right. So Bonnet and Blackbeard were one of those weird friendships where one of the friends thinks they're friends and the other one's just using them. Bonnet was certain that he and Blackbeard were best buds. After all, when Bonnet and his crew nearly died during a raid because Bonnet was completely incompetent, Blackbeard took over Bonnet's ship and allowed Bonnet to remain as a guest on the Revenge while he healed up. What a good friend, right? Meanwhile, Blackbeard was busy stealing Bonnet's crew and all his loot. In 1718, when Blackbeard finished using all he could from Bonnet, he left a weakened and starving Bonnet and crew beached in their damaged boat along the northern coast of South Carolina. So while Bonnet and the wretched crew tried to repair the boat, Colonel William Rhett from South Carolina got word that a pirate ship was laying low, and he set out to capture it. He successfully captured Stede Bonnet and 29 of his men, and they were taken back to the provost dungeon. The government was looking to make an example of the pirates and end the practice of piracy off the coast of America. All 29 men were hanged on November 8th, 1718, and Bonnet wasn't very far behind when he was hanged on December 10th. So the spirits of those pirates are thought to hang around. Really quick, the reason that they had a wall around South Carolina is by the time of the American Revolution, really, and even into the early 1700s, so far before the American Revolution, there were four big shipping hubs in the colonies. So there was Boston, New York, Philadelphia, and Charleston. So pirates would often hang out around Charleston, South Carolina, looking to pick off the merchant ships that were coming in. So I thought that was really interesting. Another interesting tidbit that I picked up along the way while I was doing my research on this is that the Exchange Building itself is built in that same time period. And so it's really thought of along the same lines as like the Faneuil Hall building in Boston, Independence Hall in Philadelphia. It's one of those like historic patriotic buildings that is probably always going to be there because it's so important. So I wasn't sure where to throw that in my story. And I thought that was the perfect place because it came to mind right then. All right. Next up, we have the curious case of Isaac Hayne.
Hold on.
Go ahead.
How do the pirates haunt the place?
I don't know. I get to that later. I just talk about the hauntings in general.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Then there's the curious case of Isaac Hayne. Isaac was a British citizen living in the colonies when the American Revolution broke out. He was a landowner, merchant, pretty successful guy. So when the revolution broke out, he had to swear allegiance to the British crown. And he wrote out his Pledge of Allegiance. He's got it in that flowery language, and I didn't copy down everything that he said. I really just noted down the gist of it, but it went like this. He would grudgingly give his allegiance to Great Britain until and unless the American cause gained strength and took back over. Yeah, not really a great idea. If you can believe it, the British deemed him a traitor to the crown and ordered him hung. But being a wealthy landowning merchant, he wasn't subjected to await his execution in the provost dungeon. He was allowed a full 36 hours to contemplate his eternal fate while waiting in the grand ballroom upstairs. Now, the grand ballroom was supposedly empty of all furnishings except one, a coffin. He spent 36 hours sitting in a giant room, just him and the coffin he would be buried in after he died. I can't even imagine what he's thinking. Like, I really wonder, like, did he climb into it? Like, what do you think?
I would have. You got to sleep somewhere.
And I suppose, but...
Actually, I don't know, because I guess back then they probably weren't padded.
Right. It would have been just like a pine box.
Yeah.
But all the same, like... You just get to sit there and just think about the fact that you're going to spend eternity in that box right there. So, Isaac Haynes is believed to be the spirit that opens and closes the doors to the grand ballroom whenever he wants. Caretakers and tour guides will be in the grand ballroom with the doors wide open, and they'll turn their backs on the large double doors for a moment. And when they turn around again, the doors are closed soundlessly. And like, these are like big doors that make noise, right? And so that's really the part that they find the most upsetting, is like, they didn't even make any noise when they closed. Tourists, locals, and guides alike all report strange happenings in the exchange building and the provost dungeon. On the upper floors, there are spirits who appear wearing colonial period garb. Visitors think that they're a guide or employee, right? Like one of those people who works at Plymouth Plantation or Old Sturbridge Village, who like they think that they're in the 1600s. But when the visitor asks a question, the spirit just fades away. Ghosts are seen in the hallways upstairs, and bodiless footsteps are often heard throughout the upper floors. So the upper floors might be filled with harmless spirits, but maybe it's just their presence that's keeping visitors safe from the unsavory spirits that haunt the dungeon. As visitors descend the steps into the dungeon, they report an overwhelming sense of dread and despair come over them. They report hearing screaming, crying, and moaning from disembodied voices. The clanking of chains is heard, and some people even see the chains move despite no one being near them to touch them.
Whoa.
Dancing orbs of light and cold spots move through the space. And most frighteningly, the dungeon spirits are violent toward the visitors. Hmm. People have been pushed, and not just lightly, but like full-on shoved to the ground. And still others have encountered strangling spirits that wrap their hands around a visitor's throat and squeezes. So I've been outside the provost dungeon, and I have to tell you, it wasn't a pleasant feeling even being outside. I don't think that I'll be looking to book the inside tour, especially with my own history of being able to feel spirits touching me. But if you want to go, the adult tour is $10. It's $5 with a student ID. And the exchange building and provost dungeon are located at 122 East Bay Street in Charleston, South Carolina.
Woohoo!
Yay!
Good stories, Beth.
Thanks.
We learned a lot about South Carolina.
Well, and so it's really funny. I had wanted very much to write about the provost dungeon, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't remember the name of it, and I just thought it was the Charleston jail. So I started looking into the Charleston jail, and that is also haunted. But the more I'm like, this doesn't sound like the story that I was hearing. And so I started looking at pictures of the building, and I'm like, this isn't the building that I was standing outside of. And so I had to use all of my sleuthing capabilities to like look at like maps of Charleston and be like, we were like this far from the water. And like, and I had to like find it. And I'm like, oh, it was in the basement of that exchange building. And so I thought that was just kind of a funny thing. But I can tell you a little bit about the old jail if you like.
Sure.
Okay. It's a very little bit. Because I went through and I was doing all sorts of research before I was like, this isn't the right place. This is when I was thinking I would change the topic of this week's podcast, because I was getting very frustrated. But the old jail, it was built and in use from 1802 to 1939. It was about it today. It's about a block from the water's edge. There are no windows, no plumbing, and no air conditioning on the basement level, which is where the prison was in this building as well. So with no windows, all the air keeps rushing through. With no plumbing, there's nowhere to go to the bathroom. And with no air conditioning in that hot Charleston summer, you can imagine having no bathroom to flush away the waste that you have to sit there with that smell around all the time. In 1886, there was an earthquake that damaged the building so badly, they actually had to remove the fourth floor. So now it only has three floors to the building. There are estimates that up to 10,000 people have died in there.
Wow.
There's graffiti, like you can still see it to this day, all over the walls. And guests who come will often leave the tours that they're on with scratch marks on their bodies. They have been scratched by the spirits of ghosts in that building. And people get grabbed. There were a couple of notable inmates in there over the years. Lavinia Fisher. She was hanged in 1820. She is believed to be America's first serial killer.
Cool.
Yeah. And then Denmark Vesey. He was responsible for planning a slave revolt, and he was also hanged there. So it's thought that maybe these people could be some of the spirits that are hanging out and haunting the old Charleston jail.
Cool.
Yeah, so that was just a really quick one.
Nice.
I guess if you take the tour of that one, that's not a tour that's suitable for children or people who are sensitive, because they really go very in depth into the abuse of prisoners in that building. So if you want to go and you're somebody who's sensitive to such things about hearing the horrors that human beings have gone through, then maybe that's not the tour for you.
Okay.
Yeah. Just saying.
Cool. Good stories, Beth. I like
Thanks.
It.
Thanks. It's a short episode tonight. What can I say?
It was short and sweet.
Yes.
Okay. So we also this week have a lot of other stuff to talk about.
Yay!
Because we have mail. We have drive-by ghosting. We have EVPs.
Ooh!
And we have five-star reviews.
Hoo-hoo!
Yes.
Let's start with the EVPs.
Okay, so these aren't your regular EVPs. This is from Stephen Flaherty, who we had on last week. It's from his group while he's working with the Sacred Order of St. Michael, and it's during a, I guess you would call it like a pre-exorcism ritual, because there's no actual priest there. So first what we're going to hear is the individual talking, and we'll hear what his regular voice sounds like, and then we're going to move to some other recordings, which are of a possessed young man. So this is a trigger warning. I know we have some children who listen to our show and some parents who listen to our show with their children. Now would be a really good time to turn the show off. It would be a really, really good, because it would scare a young person for sure listening to this. So we're going to start with number one. It says number one, you can hear the kid's voice. So let's start with this.
So what do you like to do for some fun of and sit in the room with like a few kids? You like to go for walks in the woods?
I used to, not anymore though.
Bear scary. I've been so many of them around.
I mean, there's been a lot of them around, but I mean, I don't know, because I went out there when it was like snowing before, and I was walking around and there was just this like really loud roar, and I don't know where it came from because bears were hibernating at that point. And I don't know where it came from. And I was like, younger. And I actually ran out of the actual woods, like try as fast as I could.
Okay. So that is just the young gentleman talking. And this is the kid who became possessed. Now, these next two recordings, Stephen wrote to us, 2 and 3, you can hear a demon coming through. Just so you know, the people there were myself, my partner, Mike, his wife, Nancy, and the young boy's grandmother and mother. So we're going to listen to these.
That's now. A lot of people. We're going to have to sort out those voices.
I have a feeling he's sending us this because it's going to be pretty obvious.
I hope so.
All right, let's find out.
Now,
this is not your time. Go away until I call on you.
No.
Yes.
No.
God is the boss of you. Jesus oversees you. Jesus commands you to step aside and not be here. You're not wanted. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread. Forgive those who trespass against us.
Blah, blah, blah.
Leave.
I will not leave.
You will.
I'm not leaving.
You are leaving.
You are not going to control me.
Don't have to control you. Jesus controls you. What's going on is you're feeling the pain of God because you're not wanted in the spirit. It's not your place nor your time.
Why do you have to do this?
Because Damien has a pure heart. You need to have nothing
like that. He believes anything I would tell him.
Because he doesn't know any better. Because you're an ignorant spirit.
Yeah, yeah, go ahead, swear. Go right ahead.
Why? I don't have to.
Oh, you know you want to.
Oh,
you're
come
angry.
On. I don't get angry. I don't get angry.
Damien, stop fighting me!
Damien can come through anytime he wants because you're weak.
I'm not weak.
You are weak.
Then how can I control him for so long?
Only because he hasn't known how to handle you. And because you stepped in where you weren't wanted. You saw an opportunity. You can't. You can't stay.
I can stay as long as I want.
You know you can't. Those medals on you are going to burn you out of there. St. Michael and St. Benedictine, they're all going to burn you out. You know you can't fight forever. Because the next step is I'm going to bring in a Catholic priest. Mm-hmm. And then what are you going to do?
I'm going to laugh.
Oh, yes, you are.
Don't say those words. Stop it. Stop it, please.
Yes. There's more than one, you know.
We forgive those who just...
Who really
mean more than one?
Oh, there's more.
Can you tell me?
Why would I want to tell an ignorant person like you?
What's your name?
Oh, you can't tempt me to say it.
Do you know my name?
Huh?
I'm Nancy Richard.
Speak only with the word of God. Jesus is with you.
No, I'm not gonna turn into a Nazi! Lady Steiner, Damien! Lady Steiner! No, leave me alone, please! You're not going to control me. Sie von Christin, da ist die Mutter Christin, da ist Grunde, da ist sie von Christin, die Steine Hitler, du ist die Mutter.
I have so many things to say about that. And I don't even know where to start.
So that was really scary. One of the first things that came to my mind, so the other night, Paul and I were in bed and we shot straight awake because at 3:16 a.m. actually, our TV went off and I started like saying our fathers like you would not believe, and like, and Paul's Jewish, but like sitting there with Paul like doing the our fathers like for about 2 hours. And so that reminded me of that. So I'm glad to hear like actual exorcists doing it. Yeah, that was scary. What a difference. I know at the beginning of this, Beth was like, well, I hope we can tell the difference between him and the other people. Could you tell the difference, Beth?
Believe it or not, I could.
Could you tell the difference?
Yes. Yes, I. The laughing was very disturbing. And then we heard early on in the clip, one of the women asked a question. And I heard Stephen turn to her and say, don't ask it any questions. Just like he had told us when we met with him last week, that you don't ask demons questions.
Yeah.
Right. And so then as the boy was going through, and he started into that other language.
German, right? Yeah.
And I was looking at you and your eyes like went wide, and I'm like thinking to myself, like, I'm like 98% sure this is German. It didn't, I don't even know what Latin sounds like, but it didn't, it sounded German to me. And then when he said, you know, I'm not turning into a Nazi, I thought that was a very weird statement.
I think it was Damien, the boy, saying that.
Okay.
I think the boy was coming out saying that, like, you're not going to turn me into that.
Also, what are the chances that this kid's name is Damien?
I know. I thought that was the first thing I thought too. So we just kind of like squished those last ones together. But wasn't that wild, Beth?
Yeah. I'm kind of wishing there was somebody else here with me.
Oh, I have the heebie-jeebies. Mm. I'm going to make Paul watch 90 Day Fiancé with me all night to get my energy back.
Yeah. I don't know what Sean and I are going to watch, but we have to find a new show to watch.
Might I suggest 90 Day Fiancé?
You can suggest it, but Sean won't go for it.
Paul loves it, like, as much as I do. We will stay up till 2 a.m. watching that show. We just love it. Okay. So we have some.
Have you tried watching Marriage or Mortgage?
No.
I watched the first two episodes. I'm like, I can't watch any more of this.
No.
Why on earth would anybody choose a wedding over a house?
I don't know.
Right?
I kind of get it. But okay. So that being said, I have like a very modest wedding coming up. Okay. So our next one we're going to listen to comes to us from Julie. Dear Miss Amelia and Miss Beth.
Oh. Ooh, I even get a title.
Hello, my name is Julie. I'm writing to you from Massachusetts, Boston area.
Woo-hoo!
I'm 16 years old, and I'll start by saying I love your podcast.
Yay! Mm. Us
thank
too.
You, thank you. I'm very into the supernatural, cryptids, and spiritual aspects of my life and have been since I was very young. My mother can attest that I was obsessed with the show Finding Bigfoot when I was 7 or 8. It dawned on me one day that I should look for a podcast about it and stumbled across yours and immediately fell in love with your dynamic and engaging episodes. Thank you. I would totally give 6 stars if I could. Well, gosh darn it. I really appreciate that, Julie. I'm a spiritual person myself, as I'm quite interested in ghosts and spirits and legends surrounding them. I love how I learn something new about the history and topics you cover. In addition, just in my everyday life, I see certain animals quite often have dreams with what seem like symbols or something in them, and also seem to be followed by certain numbers, especially 333, which I have been remember seeing since I was very young. I find it all fascinating. I'm constantly looking for ways to connect with that side of myself, and your podcast helps me do just that, as well as helping to make shoveling the deck after 8 hours of online school substantially more entertaining. I would like to thank the two of you from the bottom of my heart for the fact that your podcast is helping me get through some dark times. I wanted to say thank you for all the work you put into it, and all the fun you have is deeply appreciated, and words really cannot express my gratitude. Happy hunting, Julie.
Julie, that was amazing. Thank you so much for listening to our podcast. And, you know, I'm so glad that you can enjoy it. And I also, as a former English teacher, can I just point out that you seem to have a talent for writing and for sharing information through your writing. So I certainly hope that you continue to follow that path.
Yes. And I was thinking about, so Beth and I, we got this email. We were staying together. We're getting our nails done, right? Because Beth's mother got us a very, very wonderful, nice gift to go out and get our nails done for my bridal shower, which Beth threw me this weekend. And oh my God, she did a great time. It was on Zoom. It was just wonderful. Anyway, through all the excitement, I realized that we didn't respond to Julie, that we were just like, oh my God, this is amazing. And then I was like thinking about it. I was like, if I was 16 and like I did this and no one responded to me, I'd have a freaking heart attack and I'd never listen again. But that wasn't even what I was thinking about. I was literally like at my parents' house. I was watching my mother. I was doing work at their dining room table, just like my desk job. And I started thinking of like being 16 and I was like, oh, like that girl, Julie, you know? And I was like, oh my God, we never wrote Julie back. So anyway, long story already too long. I wrote her back and I was like, oh, like a little bit about numerology and about like spirit totems and things like that. One of my customers had got me really into spirit totems. I think they're a really cool thing. We've never talked about it on the show, but I think we should sometime. Okay. Anyway, so I read her that. She wrote back to us. That is quite all right. Thank you very much for getting back to me. That sounds really interesting. I'll be sure to do that. Look into animal totems. I see red-tailed hawks quite often, more often than normal, as I know they are common around.
You froze. What happened to you? Why did you freeze?
Amelia, you're frozen.
Oh, now you're gone. Amelia got kicked out of the podcast. That's too bad because I really wanted to hear what the rest of that email with Julie, what Julie said. She's sending me a text message. Her entire computer just froze. We might be waiting a while. Oh, hi. Welcome back.
Thank you so much. You just disappeared again.
I'm right here.
Well, no, because now other stuff's like popping up on my computer.
Oh, all your machine is booting up.
Well, no, it's still sideways. Okay, so anyway.
Would you like me to sit like this?
I can't see you, Beth. That's what I'm saying. I can't see you because other things are up. And I'm very freaked out right now. I'm freaked out that happened after listening to those tapes. I made Paul come out here and sit with me for the rest of the show. I grabbed Paul's hand and started doing Our Fathers, and he made a funny face at me, and I almost punched him. And I'm just feeling a little freaked out right now, so that's okay. So anyway.
Reading the response from Julie.
Okay. So this is now we're back on Julie's thing. I'm going to calm down as I read it. I also take it as a positive sign as well, and I deeply appreciate your support. Thank you. Seeing certain numbers at certain times can be very powerful. I'm finding it as it seems that they're putting me out here for a purpose. I was also being completely silly and forgot to include my original email as a drive-by ghosting I have. It's not a ghost per se, but it's definitely eerie. So here it goes. When I was around 13, I would get off the bus at my grandparents' house, which is big, gray, colonial in my town. I would do my homework upstairs on the computer room until around 6 p.m. when my mom would come and pick me up after work. I remember at dusk always getting the sensation I was not alone in the room and that I was being watched. I recall that I would go check over my shoulder a lot to find out the room was obviously empty. At the time, I chalked it up to a very strong imagination. Fast forward just a few years, and I was telling my mom about this, and she said when she lived there that that room used to be her bedroom and that a woman who previously lived in the house where my grandparents bought it had passed away in that room. Another fact she shared with me was that once she had the bed facing a certain direction or room, her cat absolutely refused to go in the room. I think about it now and become slightly freaked out that maybe I wasn't actually alone in the computer room upstairs. Thank you, Julie. Well, thank you, Julie. Great story.
Yeah. And I think that, like we talked about with Stephen Flaherty last week, we're never alone. There's always our spirits, our ancestors. They hang around with us to see what's going on. So, yeah, we should never think that we're alone.
No.
No, never.
So, yeah. Thanks, Julie. That was great. That was awesome. I love that there's someone else listening who sees these repeating numbers every which way. And I'm interested to find out.
I was definitely thinking, Amelia, that you might have a protege here between the numbers, the crystals, the birds.
Yeah, I love it. I was thinking about it yesterday too, because yesterday I was out for a walk and I kept seeing all these hawks, and on the building next to mine, there was this red-shouldered hawk. And I was like taking all these photos. I was being this photographer and I sent it to my dad, and then my phone died. That's not part of the story, but it did happen. And yeah, cool. So that was awesome. Julie, amazing. I love it. And now we have some reviews.
Bum, bum, bum.
Our first review of the evening comes to us from the Apple Podcast Store. This is from Carmen Duval. My kind of pod. You only have 85 total ratings. We need to change that. Born and raised in Rhode Island here. Love your show. Definitely 5-star worthy. Happy hunting. Well, thank you so much, Carmen Deville. That's amazing.
Thank you, Carmen Deville. And now we're up to 86 reviews.
No, they were 85. They were number 85.
Oh, they were number 85? They were number 85. Excellent.
Yeah. So thank you so much.
You should play that number tonight, Carmen. 085.
Then, thank you everyone who has been leaving us reviews on Audible. We definitely need some more. So if you guys didn't hear us last week, please tune in to Audible, where we are now on, and you can leave us 15
a 15-star review.
15-star reviews there.
That means that you can give Amelia a 10-star review and give me a 5-star review, and we would both be happy with that.
We wouldn't even know who you gave the 10 and who you gave the 5 to.
Right.
All right. Title, Best Podcast.
Oh, I like this one already.
This is my favorite podcast to listen to on long trips. Keep up the great work, Amelia and Beth. 15 stars. Well, thank you so much.
You know, this is also Amelia's favorite podcast to listen to on long trips.
It sure is.
She and Paul drive back and forth to Rhode Island, not Rhode Island. She and no, Paul drive back and forth to Pennsylvania, and she makes him listen to the podcast all the way there and all the way back.
I do. I love it. It's my favorite Sookie podcast. Okay. Our next review comes from GLD USA. Real ghost hunting. I love this show. I listen to a lot of paranormal shows, and they mostly all tell the same well-known haunting stories. This one does their own ghost hunts on the show. It's always interesting stories that I'm not overly familiar with. My favorite episodes are their interviews with other ghost hunters and psychics, and the personal readings they've had done by their guests are so cool. Overall, it's a great listen. Well, thank you so much, GLD USA. That is very encouraging. And it's, I don't know if the word's ironic, it's coincidental. We just got this one today, and literally yesterday, I was talking to Paul, and I'm like, you know, I love doing interviews on the show, but those are always like we don't, a lot of people don't listen to those episodes. Like, they're not as catchy. I mean, except we did one with Jamie Day that was really popular, and Tim Regan ones. Everyone loves Tim Regan. But other than that, you know, they don't really pick up the same way as our other episodes. And then we got this one, and I felt just tickled. I was tickled.
You were validated.
A little, yeah.
Yeah. There are people out there listening to the interviews.
Yeah. It's funny. Amelia and I were talking earlier tonight before we started recording about whether we want to get an interview on for next week or whether we want to do something else. And so we'll let you guys think about maybe what we'll have next week. But yeah, I like doing the interviews. I also like doing the research on the ghost stories themselves. But yeah, those readings that we get from Tim Regan, I love them. I actually go back and listen to those episodes over and over again.
They're wonderful.
Yeah, he does such a good job with us.
Well, thank you all so much for listening. You can find us online at ghosthuntinginnewengland.com, on facebook.com/ghosthuntinginnewengland, on Twitter, ghosthuntingne. You can find us on Instagram at ghosthuntinginnewengland. Did I already say that one? Did I shout out Instagram twice? I don't know.
Nope, you did website, Facebook, Twitter, Insta.
Oh, weird. Thank you so much to Aaron Schild for doing our music. You can find him and his podcast at Natural Tour Stop. And thank you to everyone who left us reviews this week. Please continue to leave us 5-star reviews. Don't leave us a 3-star review. That's just rude. If you don't think the show deserves 5 stars, you can send us an email at ghosthuntinginnewengland@gmail.com and tell us what we can do to make the show better for you. And as always,
happy hunting.